Welcome in on a Thursday. Kevin with you here. Russ will be joining the program at some point. He has a meeting that he has to do for the company. So as you know, it's Russ's world. We're all just living in it. We all just kind of work around his schedule and, we arrange the puzzle pieces to fit his schedule as best we can. Yeah, we were supposed to have the Phillies today. It was supposed to be a nice day to start baseball opening day. That's been pushed back. So John Belaris was right once again. That's 2 years in a row that John Belaris nailed the forecast. And we've had, opening day, weather-related stories. So I have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Phillies weekend for you instead, which is just as good as Thursday, Saturday, Sunday in my mind. I have to admit off the start here that I lied to you. I lied to everyone. I said that we were going to talk about all of the teams when we do this show. Five for five, try to touch on everybody, even if it's just for a couple minutes at a time. I lied. I'm not going to talk about the Eagles today because I do not care one bit about the Eagles. We'll probably leave the Phillies for next week because there's really nothing to talk about. The season starting tomorrow. We're going to go heavy on Flyers. We're going to go heavy on some other stuff and kind of explore some different topics. So until Russ gets here, I've got Trevor from Upper Bowl standing in joining us on the show. Let's bring Trev on. There he is.
What's up, my guy? How
are
we doing?
Good, man. How are you? What's going on in Florida?
It's opening day. I literally just spent $30 to go to opening day with me and my buddies for a whopping $30, by the way.
Okay.
Grand total price to go see the Pirates and Marlins and laugh at Marlins fans.
What a series to start off the year.
What a season just to get the people down here. Last year, they had all the New Yorkers down here. This year, you know what? Forget it. You're not going to get all the New Yorkers right away. You have to deal with the people from Pittsburgh that came down from Bradenton anyway. So
yeah. Is it bad that I'm right. Yeah. Ford is in the chat saying that Kincaid doesn't care about the Eagles. I do. I can't hide it, man. I cannot. Like, I know that, the Eagles pay the bills. Mm-hmm. In Philadelphia sports media households, and you have to talk about the birds, but we're not WIP. I think we can survive. We can talk about some different stuff.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't care about the Eagles right now. I really don't. I don't want to look at them either. It's like the Eagles are. I feel like I need to go to Eagle rehab because it's like after last year, it's like I'm done for a while. I don't want to see you till August, honestly. So,
but I don't want people to take it the wrong way. I don't think any less of the Eagles. I will get right back on the Eagles when it comes time. I just need a break. I need a little bit of a break. I need an Eagles respite or respite. Is it respite? I think it's respite.
I think you need a rest. You need to decompress with the Eagles. I don't want to even see them. I don't even like. I saw enough of Jason Kelce. I've seen everything. It's like, you know what? Wake me up when it's August or July when there's nothing else to talk about. Then we'll roll out the Eagles content.
Honestly, we had the Eagles wave of free agency. But give me this little break, and then we'll get into the draft stuff because I love the draft. I watch more college football probably than most people in Philadelphia sports media. But I need this kind of like break in between. We can do some. Whatever winter team is doing better, the Sixers or the Flyers, and then, we'll get into the Phillies or whatever. But I got to tell you, man, honestly, the most compelling team in the city right now is the Philadelphia Flyers.
I can't get
enough of them, all the storylines and all the different stuff. So usually we have Russ on the show to talk hockey, but we brought an actual expert on to talk about hockey this time. Welcome Kevin Kurz from The Athletic to the show, everybody. What's up, man?
How you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for jumping on.
No problem at all.
Yeah, I got to be honest, man. I just... There's been, I'm a hockey casual, most of the hockey stuff at Crossing Broad is handled by Anthony and by Russ, and they've got Bundy doing Snow the goalie, but I've been hooked, man. I just find everything that's surrounding this team to be totally compelling right now. Not just the John Tortorella media stuff and the roller coaster that we're riding with him, but just the fact that this is a team that's, for all intents and purposes, ahead of schedule and playing meaningful hockey on March 28th, which I did not think was going to happen, admittedly. I don't know if many people thought that was going to happen. But we'll get into all that. Let's start macro before we get into the specific stuff. They come out of this gauntlet, Toronto, Carolina, Boston, Florida, Rangers. A couple wins, a couple overtime losses. They're still in playoff contention as of now. Was this an admirable job coming out of that schedule, or is that what you expected or not expected?
No, it was to me, because at the start of it, it looked like the wheels might be ready to come off. And it was easy to identify why. Sean Walker was probably their most consistent defenseman. He gets traded. They have all these other injuries on the back end. Nick Seeler, who's kind of the heart and soul of the defense back there, running around, blocking shots all over the place, hitting guys, playing that agitating style. Jamie Drysdale, who obviously came over in that Cutter Gauthier trade in January, he was starting to get more comfortable. There were still some, you know, he still wasn't doing a whole lot on either end of the ice, but you could see him, particularly on the power play, starting to have more of an impact. He goes out, and Ristolainen's still a, you know, maybe not the most mobile guy, but he's still a big guy. He's still a mean guy. He still provides some value. So all those guys out, they were a mess for a little bit, particularly defensively, having trouble getting the puck out of their own end and turnovers and just not really playing as a connected five-man group. And they fixed that, and they fixed it quickly. And that's impressive. I mean, that's a credit not just to the players, but to Brad Shaw, the coach in charge of the defense, to Torts himself. They've all gotten on the same page, and they were playing a much more, you know, connected is the word they've used, because they know that as a team, they have to play as a five-man unit if they're going to be successful, not just offensively, but defensively, getting the puck out of their own end and still trying to play that fast transition game, getting it up to the, you know, a lot of their forwards that do have that sort of speed. So, they're in a good spot. You know, 9 games left, only 2 against teams that are currently in playoff position. And the challenge now, of course, is going to be maintaining the same sort of intensity they had against these teams that they know they had to play that way, or else they would have gotten their butts kicked. This will be an interesting couple games against Montreal and Chicago, 2 teams that are obviously well out of the playoff race. Chicago, one of the worst teams in the league. Yeah. Are they going to be able to play the same sort of way they did against the Bruins, the Rangers, the Hurricanes, and those teams? So that'll be the challenge. But I think they will. I think they've shown that kind of character and that kind of, you know, just the way they've played, the way they've prepared on an almost nightly basis has really been impressive to me.
Yeah, it's like, can you, Anthony wrote something to that point yesterday. You've been shown that you can play with the best in the NHL. Now, can you play with the dregs of the NHL? You can play up to your competition. Are you going to play down? Are you going to like maintain this level? I had a take, you know, my hot take like a month, maybe more than a month ago, probably was something along the lines of, you know, if the season ended now or they didn't, if they didn't win another game for the rest of the year, I would have been fine with the season and I would have called it a success, because in my mind, I've seen all that I need to see from some of their younger guys to know that there's talent here, that they're playing for Torts and all of that. And like, I was one of those people who did not give a shit whether they made the playoffs or not. To me, it was not success this year. Was not contingent on whether they made the postseason or not. But now that they're there, right. I mean, what's your thought on that? Does making the playoffs, you're talking about like, you're getting these guys some playoff experience, but of course you're always going to have the other people who say they're ahead of schedule, draft picks and all that nonsense. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that we're right on the cusp, I mean, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think they want to make the playoffs. They should want to make the playoffs. And really, I've been saying that since back at the trade deadline. And you look at what Danny Briere did. He obviously brought in a couple guys, Eric Johnson on defense, a guy they've really needed. You know, tail end of his career. He's not a superstar anymore, but he's a big body that was the kind of guy that you could say they needed with Seeler and Ristolainen out. You still need a little bit of size on your back end, even if they're not the most mobile guys. And, you know, they bring in a forward in Denis Gurianov, who hasn't really played much, so he's been sort of a non-factor. But it's clear they want to make the playoffs. And you mentioned the part that they do talk about. That is important, getting guys like Tyson Forster, Cam York. I mean, even Joel Farabee has never played a playoff game at home in a non-COVID year. He doesn't know what it's like to see a packed Wells Fargo Center in the playoffs. So, you know, even those guys like that who are getting into their mid-20s that have been with the team forever have a lack of playoff experience. And that is important. The other side is, I don't think we should also, you have to remember, this is also a business too, right? And a big part of the reason Keith Jones was brought in was to help bring a lot of the fans back that they lost over the last 4 or 5, yeah. 6 years.
Yeah. And by the way, real quick, not to interrupt.
10 years.
Yeah, just on that note real quick, I went down to like 2 games this year, you know, and like I'm walking around in the concourse before the game and I just see like a line of people standing there. I'm like, what is this line of people doing here? Like, what are they waiting to do? What are they waiting to see? They wanted to talk to Jonesy. Like there was a line of people like waiting to just like talk to him and take pictures with him and everything, you know?
Yeah,
like,
and he'll do that too. I've seen him walk around to the practice rink. If fans are out there coming to Voorhees going to practice, he'll be out there every once in a while taking pictures with fans and whatnot. But you know, as much as the success this season has maybe brought the team back onto some people's radar in this town, you can't fully do that unless you make the playoffs. I mean, if this team makes the playoffs, you guys know how it is. I grew up here. I worked for the team, you know, 15 years ago. Yeah. Nothing will get these fans back more than a playoff run. And you could also probably say a lot of them aren't even going to start paying attention if and until they make the playoffs. So I think that would be a big boost for the team in multiple facets. So, you know, that's why they made it a priority. And that's why, you know, there's no doubt they all want to get in now. I mean, from top to bottom, they want some playoff games in Philadelphia.
As someone who lives out of town, I live in South Florida. I saw a big difference with a lot more Flyer fans are coming to the Panther games and also the Lightning game. There's I was there opening night in 2022. There's like, nope, not many Flyer fans. 2022 in March, not many Flyer fans. Like this year, it's like, oh, there's a boost. It's like, oh, I could say we're almost back pretty much what it was when I was growing up pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, even last week, and you're right, I was down there for those Florida games. This is my first year covering the team since I left town in 2011. But, you know, some of the crowds last week I thought were a little disappointing. Some of the crowds in Philadelphia were a little disappointing, and I forget what days of the week they were. I guess it wasn't the Saturday games are always fine, but the, you know, the Tuesdays or the Thursdays against whoever it was in town.
Toronto.
Yeah, the first Toronto game there was a ton of Toronto fans. Second one, not so much. That was a little bit of a disappointing crowd. And of course, when the Rangers are here, there's just an influx of Ranger fans. So you have to wonder, from a Philly standpoint, do they really want to play the Rangers in the first round because they might get inundated with Ranger fans? But yeah, again, I think this team won't fully be back on the sports radar in this town unless they make the playoffs, and they recognize that. And that's why Jonesy, a big part of the reason Jonesy's in the chair that he's in.
Yeah. Is this the best thing that's happened with Keith Jones taking over? Like the Hextall era, I feel like they try to like ignore the chaos and shut the chaos out and make it as a boring franchise. The Flyers, we could say that we're officially back now. We're entertaining, at least in the media side, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's still the first year, so you don't want to jump to any overriding conclusions just yet. I mean, this thing's going to have to play out over a couple years, obviously, with Jonesy and Danny Briere and Dan Hilferty. I think it was they came into a situation that really the franchise could only go up, and I noticed that from afar when I wasn't here. I mean, I could tell that I would come to Flyers games as a visiting, you know, covering the visiting team. And it just seemed so foreign. It just seemed like they had gotten so far away from some of the tradition and some of, you know, what made the Flyers especially over the last 5 years. So I think the fact that Keith Jones and Danny Briere both know what this organization is supposed to be about, and Dan Hilferty too, that's going to help them from the business side. Now the hockey side, we'll see where it goes. Clearly, they need this Matvei Michkov to come over, and he's kind of the star that they're wishing upon, right? Because the way the rebuild's going now, they're not going to be able to count on a surplus of top five, top 10 picks over the next 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's funny. This might sound kind of corny to say, but I'm not a fan, right? I mean, I look at it from a jaded media perspective, but I like these seasons the most for any team because I feel like you have a transitional thing where there's no expectations on anybody and you're seeing a lot of glimpses of the future. You know, the Sixers coming out of the process, like 2016-17 had a year like this. The Eagles don't have large like groundswells of being terrible, but like at the end
Chip
of that
Kelly, year, the first year of Chip Kelly was, it was kind of nice, like, oh, this team's entertaining.
That was interesting, right? Yeah. And even like that Jalen Hurts first year, like where they started winning games at the end of 2021, where you're like, okay, I can see something starting to form here. So that's why I appreciate this Flyer season. Kevin, here's the thing that's driving me crazy from an actual on ice perspective. So
can I guess it?
You can guess. I know you know what it is. Yeah.
Is it the overtime he puts out, the 3-on-3? That makes you want to go crazy too.
But let me read. So this is two overtime losses in a row, Carolina and the Rangers on Tuesday night, where Torts has not gotten Travis Konechny, Morgan Frost, or Owen Tippett off the bench. You know, guys who I think we would agree are like probably their most skilled offensive guys.
Yes.
Both times he sent Brad Shaw out to do media afterwards, and Shaw said the other night, so they had Ryan Poehling, Noah Cates, and Travis Sanheim on the ice the other night, and then the Rangers score, and that's it. They don't even get a second shift, right? Shaw says Paling has been one of our best two-way players for the last 2 to 3 months, and he's got a chance to win the faceoff, and plus he's responsible at both ends of the rink. He's played well offensively and defensively. He's earned the right to get out here, to get out there. Obviously, it didn't end the way we wanted. I think he's the right guy to put out there. They've got two of their best offensive guys, one of the best offensive defensemen out there, and Adam Fox as well. So we have guys that we feel are going to play both ends of the rink really well, and it didn't work out. Okay, this, I got nothing wrong with the strategy. Like, I get it. You know, you're trying to feel them out maybe over time, then you hang on for a little bit, and bam, here come your skill guys off the bench. But my thing, Kevin, is like, yeah, I didn't even make it to that point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and if they tried a third time, it would be insane. I do get the strategy a little bit. Sometimes I think, you know, in overtimes and shootouts, I think sometimes there's a little bit of over-analysis with those things. I mean, it can be such a crapshoot. And obviously you do want your top offensive guys out there, especially the guys with speed. I mean, there's nothing more important in 3-on-3 overtime than speed to create that separation that you need. So, you know, at the same time, those three guys, Konechny, Morgan Frost, Owen Tippett, neither of those three guys are your best defensive guys by any stretch of the imagination. No. So, you know, I assume if they had gotten possession and you know, you have two guys out there that can take faceoffs, and Paling and Cates. So you're trying to get possession, and then, you know, maybe you set up in the offensive zone a little bit, you cycle it around, and then you pull out, right? And then you flip on, then you bring on your Konechnys and your Tippetts or whoever else. So, you know, it didn't work out. Obviously, it hasn't worked out the last two games. We'll see where it goes from here. But, you know, I know people, I know it's easy to look at that sort of part of the game and be like, well, why the hell were those three guys out there? But I mean, you know, usually it just takes one shift in 3-on-3 overtime, and then the whole thing is just devolves into chaos, right? And then you get those guys out there.
It's like what we complain about the Eagles. I hate the bubble screen more than anything. It's my least favorite play on the planet. But if one of these days they're going to break one for like 50 yards, and then I'm going to say, okay, well, maybe there's something to it. So I get it in theory. I take things at very simple face value, right? And it's like, yeah, your best offensive players didn't get off the ice in overtime, you know. So I think that's where people, I think sometimes people can't see past that, you know. So.
Now that said, you know, the Rangers won the faceoff, never gave up possession, and you know, if the Rangers win the faceoff, that, you know, you got Adam Fox and those guys out there. I mean, you know, the game could have ended just as easily with those, you know, Tippett and Frost and Konechny never touching the puck if you don't have a guy out there to win a faceoff. So
that's true. I'm just curious. So we've been on kind of the roller coaster with John Tortorella for the last four or five weeks now. It's been great for content. I mean, there's been no lack of things.
That's true. Yeah, I can appreciate that too.
Yeah.
Can I ask this? Is there going to be a grievance filed because he's like throwing out Brad Schaaf out there a few times for press conferences?
No. I mean, I was actually chatting with someone in PR yesterday. As long as they send a coach out, that satisfies the guidelines. Now, if he did it consistently, that would probably be an issue, but. Frankly, after that loss, Brad Schaaf was a better quote than Torts was going to be anyway. I mean, Torts after losses can sometimes, you know, we've seen press conferences that last for under 60 seconds. And I thought Brad Schaaf was actually really insightful with the stuff that we asked him. So I didn't have any problems with that.
Is the last conference Tortorella had went viral down here in Florida. Everyone's like, asked me what's up with his hand and why didn't he say it? I was like, listen.
Just adds to it. It's like the mystique of the whole thing. He won't answer Anthony's questions. Where did the club hand come from? Like, he's angry with everybody. But I guess, like, no, you make a good point, Kevin, though, because, right, I mean, that quote that I just read off here, that was the most that we've gotten on the.
That was more than you would have gotten from Torts, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. He just said, well, those were the guys we selected. I mean, sure, he was pissed off after they lost, which, whatever. The one thing, though, I do want to say about Torts is, especially on the off days, he's been great. I mean, he will sit there. If you watch the videos that the team puts up on YouTube and you don't read the comments of everyone bitching about how the fact that the reporters don't have microphones, you will notice that he is very detailed and very insightful. And he does take his time and give thoughtful answers to just about all the questions. I mean, there's times he'll sit there for 10 to 12 minutes. And he'll get through everyone's questions. And honestly, I think 90 to 95% of the time, it's the same thing he's telling us is exactly what he's telling the players. That's the impression that I come away with. That, you know, that's from talking to the players as well. So I have no complaints as a reporter covering Torts this year. Yes, there's times he's short after games. He's ticked off, whatever. He should be, right? You'd rather have a coach that's ticked off after a loss than someone that's taking it in stride. And frankly, I think post-game quotes half the time are pretty useless anyway. So as long as he's, you know, patient and detailed and insightful on these off days or after the morning skates, I mean, that's really all I think you can ask for as a reporter.
And yeah, it's a good point because, like, there are peaks and valleys. You know, it's funny. We'll do, like, a, you know, Torts spoke for 30 seconds then walked off the side. But then I'm looking at, like, the YouTube channel the next day and the Flyers have, like, a morning skate or something. It's, like, 8 minutes long.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, he's gone 8 minutes. Sometimes is the minimum. I mean, sometimes he'll go 10, 12. I mean, it's great. So, you know, everyone sees the ones that go viral when he's, you know, takes three questions and storms away from the podium. But more times than not, he's been great to deal with. And you know, I actually appreciate the way he's handled his media stuff this year.
Trevor, what were you going to say, man?
I was going to say there was a report during when he was in Columbus, he was supposed to go to the front office. And Yarmo.
Someone told me this the other day. Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
It went viral on Nick Kiprios' show up in Sportsnet in Canada. And there's talks of Craig Berube, which I've been kind of hammering the table. If it does happen, let bring back Berube. Do we see this happening? Because I could honestly see this be really bad because there's a good synergy upstairs. And I feel like Torts will just throw a mocktail cocktail in the middle of this.
No, I would disagree with that because I think you can tell already that there are signs that Torts has a little bit more influence on the decisions the front office is making than most head coaches do. I mean, when they made that Drysdale trade, he was talking about how the fact he watched video of Drysdale. And so I assume he watched video of other guys too, that might've been in the conversation for players they were trying to acquire all leading up to the trade deadline. I mean, he was very open with the whole organizational philosophy and we can't fall in love with players, but just because of where we are at the process. I mean, you know, a lot of times you ask a coach about potential players moving before the trade deadline and that coach will say, oh, that's not up to me. That's above my pay grade. That's up to the general manager. Torts was not saying that stuff at all. So I don't think there's any question that he was involved in those meetings. He was involved in even a guy like Gurionov they bring back. He was talking about how we watched him in the playoffs and how he had a great year in the bubble and this and that. So there's no question that he's involved in a lot of these discussions that most head coaches or at least a good handful of coaches are not, are not involved in. So could he move to the front office? I almost expect that. I mean, the guy's 65 years old. He's already said this is his last stop. Would it completely shock me if he says I'm moving up to the front office and Brad Shaw's our head coach now, or Rocky Thompson, or Craig Berube? That would not shock me at all. I don't think he's reached the point yet where he wants to stop coaching. I think he's especially this year. I think he's had a blast. I mean, you can tell he truly likes this group, likes this dressing room, likes the culture they've established. I don't think he's in any sort of rush to walk away from that just yet, particularly with the success they've had. I mean, Christ, the guy could win the Jack Adams this year. So I don't think we're going to reach that point this summer, but I would be surprised if the organization doesn't keep him around in some sort of front office role after he decides he's done coaching, or unless this thing somehow goes off the rails over the next one to 2 years.
Become like Columbus, what has happened in Columbus, you see from afar how much of a dumpster fire they are after the Tortorella. Yeah. I just don't want that to happen in my franchise.
I don't think that's gonna. I think you're safe in that. Danny Briere is not Doug McLean, so I think you're safe in that regard. Yeah.
Kevin, two more quick ones for you. And I just lost. Oh, the Jack Adams. I feel like Torts is kind of low on the list when I'm looking at some of these like just odds and predictions and what the books are setting or whatever. I think everybody thinks that like Rick Tocchet's going to run away with it.
Yeah, probably.
Which kind of like influences the discussion behind it. But I mean, like, who do you think's going to win it, and where do you think Torts should be in that list?
Yeah, the odd thing about the Jack Adams is that's the one that's voted on by the broadcasters. So we don't, you know, the PHWA that I'm a part of, we vote for the Hart, the Selke, the Norris, and all that. It's the team broadcasters that vote for the Jack Adams. So it's sometimes a little tough to predict. You can make a case that just every coach that hasn't gotten fired this year should tie for the Jack Adams, but Torts will be in the mix. You know, I think I would think he'd be a finalist, maybe a bubble, but I think Rick Tocchet. I mean, you can make a case for so many different coaches this year. Jim Montgomery in Boston, you know, the players they lost, they picked right up back where they were. You know, Paul Maurice in Florida. I mean, there's so many coaches that could be up for it. But let's not forget, most everyone, including me, picked the Flyers to finish in last place in the Metropolitan Division this season. I mean, I'll admit that.
I did too, by the way. Like,
yeah, I mean, most people did, right? We thought they'd be worse than the Blue Jackets. So the fact that they are where they are does speak to – and, you know, the biggest plus in Torts' column is that he's gotten so much growth from so many of the young players as a whole. Tyson Forrester, Owen Tippett. I mean, even Morgan Frost. Look how he handled him, scratching him scratching him in the beginning of the season. Now he's one of their most important offensive guys. Cam York, Samuel Larson. You know, all these guys. And if you go back to last season, he identified which guys they had to remove from the dressing room, right? And that actually speaks to what I was talking about before, about how I think he has more of a role in the front office than many other head coaches do. So,
He did talk about subtraction, I think, right? Isn't that a direct quote?
Many times, yeah.
Subtract from the locker room. Yeah.
Yeah. Many times. And so, you know, the fact that they've sort of reset that, and I know it's easy to talk about culture when the team's winning, the culture is great. When the team's losing, the culture sucks. But I think, you know, this is something they've been talking about since early in the year before they knew they were a potential playoff team. So I do buy into that. And I do think that he deserves a pretty big chunk of the credit for fixing that.
Okay, so we actually have a breaking news item on the show in the middle of the segment, Craig. Wait, if you can pull that up, we do have it's hockey breaking news too. If Craig can bring this up. Elliot Friedman says, in a bizarre twist of events, CSKA in Moscow has terminated Ivan Fedotov's KHL contract. And Elliot Friedman comes in and says, everyone's being very careful here for obvious reasons, but it's believed that Fedotov is en route to beginning his NHL career for the Flyers. Wasn't aware until the news broke this morning, but all sides have worked on a solution for the last few weeks. So, Kevin, step in and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the cliff notes is that Fedotov was in Russia, unable to come over to the Flyers for various reasons that we are not totally aware of.
Yeah, I think it was some sort of military service. That was before I started covering the team, but yeah. I know that, you know, he's... You know, look, this team, I think... They all kind of saw what was coming with Hart, dating back to the draft when they drafted a couple guys. You know, they've got Kolesov, another Russian, I think that they're trying to get to come over. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, this is stuff that's probably, you know, more important. Not obviously it's not important for the present because they've got their two guys now. Erickson's their guy. Maybe one of these guys comes up and serves as the emergency third stringer if you make the playoffs, right? One of the black aces. You know, they're clearly trying to load up on goaltenders in the system. So you know, this guy is 27 years old, right? That's what it said. I believe he's 27 years old. So he's a little bit maybe past.
And Kolesov is 22, I want to say.
He's really young. Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, it's probably more interesting in terms of who's going to play goal for the Phantoms next season. Mm-hmm. Because if it were me, if Erickson's your number one next season, obviously Sandstrom is gone after this year. Cal Peterson, probably not an NHL goalie. I would think this offseason, if you're really looking ahead, you're looking to see if there's an established veteran that could be a backup to Erickson more than a young kid. That's at least the direction I would go. Let Erickson run with the number one starting next season, see if he can handle it, see how he does, and then go from there.
Good stuff. I'll take as many Russian goaltenders as we can. I think the other guy's Belarusian. I keep calling him Russian, but I think he's from Belarus, which Kyle Pagan would probably be interested in knowing is a separate country, which is not part of Russia. So I'll make sure I get
that. Wait, I did not know that, by the way.
Belarus is not part of Russia. It's actually its own country now, depending on who you ask over there.
I missed out on geography one day in history class.
We'll do a whole geography show one of these. I'll get a cartographer on the show and we'll do a whole geography.
We'll do it in Sports Talk in July. How about that?
We'll do it in that. But for now, Kevin Kurz from The Athletic. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. That was a good
segment. Yeah, anytime, guys. Yeah, no, this was fun. Yeah.
Flyers Talk. We'll get you on again sometime. All right.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Good stuff. Let's bring on somebody else who knows a little bit about hockey.
I think Russ wants to put me in a shoulder lock, a headlock right now for my dumb questions already. I'm going to say that probably.
No, they were good questions, man.
Okay.
Yeah. And we didn't rehearse any of that beforehand. I just told you, like, why don't you jump on the show? And you just asked questions when it was very natural, man. It was good.
Very. And also, I did a little prep because I was at Lexus this morning waiting for my car to get serviced. Like, let me just jot stuff down so I can sound.
Oh, let me just casually drop Lexus on the show.
Well, shout out to JM Lexus. They do a good deal for me anyway. So how about that? And I found that clip for you anyway, so that's why.
SB Jump says, does Kevin or former teacher Russ host the geography podcast? I think what we'll do is we'll do like a live Sporkle thing. We'll do like a blank map of Africa. We'll see who does a better job, you know? Be like a classic segment. Name the capital of Djibouti. Which is Djibouti, by the way.
We do it during the worst week of sports, the MLB All-Star break. I know there's content need to be used for that. Let's use it that week.
Yeah, there'll be another point where I don't give a shit about the Eagles and I'm looking for something else to talk about. But I really enjoy, honestly, I'm not making stuff up. This is not a bit or anything. I'm like all in on the Flyers right now.
Same time.
Not all in like I think they're going to win or whatever, but like I'm most compelled by the Philadelphia Flyers because, I mean, the Sixers or whatever, they should have won last night. Craig, actually, if you have that Sixers shot at the end, we can talk about that real quick. We're Kelly Oubre calls everybody a bitch. He says, you're a bitch. You're a bitch. You're a bitch.
I didn't know about it until like, I saw in the Heat group chat. I was like, they said, like, how much do you think he's going to get fined? I was like, I didn't know what's going on here. All I know is Draymond got tossed after 4 minutes after the Warriors.
Well, Kelly Oubre Jr., excuse me, apologized after the game. I don't think that's going to prevent him from getting fined for calling everybody a bitch. they had a chance to win. So the Sixers lost by a point to the Clippers last night. And they won a jump ball at the end. And Oubre kind of was like driving on Paul George, I think it was. And he very obviously got fouled and like went up for a shot and the buzzer ran out, but he was very clearly bodied before you could even like get the ball off. And there were some questionable like calls on the other end where Kawhi got two and ones. And they were a little bit iffy. Kawhi then got away with a block on the other end, which turned into a wedgie, which is why we had the jump ball in the first place. There was that call. There was the deflection that came off of Kelly Oubre's hand, but Tyrese Maxey slipped in the backcourt while trying to do a sideline inbound. So they had. You know, I watch all these Sixers games with the caveat that like Embiid's not there. I'm going to put the fattest asterisk on the planet on the game. I'm not going to get too high or too low if they win or if they lose. But I mean, like they lost another winnable game, you know? So I don't know. Should I be looking at it differently with Embiid not there? Or I feel like I need to have a take for Russ here. I feel like I can't sit on the fence with the Sixers right now.
Очень приятно. Меня зовут Russell. I just had to get that in. I've been Fedotov coming over. Guys, I have to be honest. None of this matters. Why are we even talking about it? Why are we talking about the Sixers? Sixers don't matter. None of this matters right now. By the way,
Russ Pagan, with the nihilism take on this.
Pagan also missed in his tweet the best part. He didn't just say, you're a bitch, you're a bitch, you're a bitch. He said, your mom's a bitch, your dad's a bitch, your grandma's a bitch. Which is, we are going way up and over. Like, way up and over. Okay? Crazy. All right. It's right. One thing to look at a ref and say, you a bitch. And then the other, but then to say, you don't know, does Kelly Oubre know that guy's dad and that guy's mom and that guy's grandma? What if that guy's grandma just died? All right. We're talking about some real trauma here. All right. What are we talking about, Kelly Oubre? You can't just go out there in the post game presser with your beautiful hair and your stunning eyes and, you know, your aura and then just make it all go away. All right, that's not how it works. Not how it works, Kelly Oubre. Actually, it is. He, you know what? I love the fact. There's one good thing. It was the knowledge that these guys will ride or die with Nick Nurse. That's a positive in his first year as the team's coach. Because you know what people wouldn't have done last year? They wouldn't have gone and backed Doc Rivers, would they? Because first of all, Doc Rivers would have pooped his pants halfway on the way over to the refs, all right? Where he does that weird kind of like walk where it looks like he's about to hobble over, where he's got like a load of feces in the back,
maybe,
you know?
He's got like arthritis or something. I mean, you never know what somebody's dealing
with. Get that shit taken care of. He's making millions of dollars to be a bad coach. Sorry, an overrated coach.
Maybe he needs a
get it handled. Get it handled, Glenn. How's your flap, by the way? I don't think I've talked to you since you got the flap handled. How's your flap? Did you show your flap to everybody on the stream?
No, I do not have my cartilage flap. It was cut off, so I have nothing to show anybody on the screen. It was surgically removed, and I got another week and a half on crutches. And I'm not going to lie, man. I'm kind of getting sick of this shit. I'm ready to be done with the crutches. I'm going to drive them over to the scrapyard when I'm done. I'm just going to throw them over the wall into the pile of aluminum and other. I'm ready to be off of them, man. I have to say, I'm not making this up. Mm-hmm. I have a newfound appreciation for athletes who are oft injured because I'm very itchy after like 2.5 weeks. I can't imagine sitting out like 3 months or whatever injury absence and beat is currently ours. So like I'm dying to just stand on 2 feet and like do the dishes, let alone shoot a basketball or something like that. I like, it is the most annoying thing on the planet. And I do have a different outlook now on injured athletes.
Wow.
Because I am myself a cripple.
I don't think you can use that word in 2024, okay. Kevin. I don't think that's okay.
I'm unable.
Let me first of all say that Crossing Broad and XL Media renounce the statement that Kevin Kincaid just made. We do not support the word cripple. That is not a word that he should be using in the year of our Lord 2024.
I have a take. Can I give you a controversial take? Because Russ likes when I don't sit on the fence. I actually have takes. I think if you used a word before it was deemed by society to be offensive, I think he should still be able to use it. Like, there should be a grandfather clause.
I'm with you on this one, actually.
Yeah. For all the stuff that we said in junior high, I think we should. Yeah.
Wait, you should get clearance if the clip surfaces now, or you should have carte blanche to use it the rest of your life.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of words, Kevin, that I'm sure you people used in Boyertown that were not okay then or still not okay now. And there might be one or two that were kind of okay in middle school in Boyertown, but aren't anymore.
We played a game. I don't even know if I can say the name of the game.
You're going to say, I know what you're going to say. Smear the...
We played Smear, yeah. But it wasn't a homophobic game.
We did not play
game.
That in New Canaan anyways.
Anyway, let's get it back to oh, we're not Kinker's talking about
just
fire.
Kinker is just trying to get the show canceled. It's great.
How about Landon Excellent. Dickerson's let's get it back to riding mowers around here. Landon Jeez. Dickerson bought a $15,000 lawnmower.
That was more about trading for my Honda Civic.
It's probably worth more than the Nissan Altima that I drove to like 220,000 miles. And then I think the undercarriage finally fell out from underneath of it on my final trip back from Morgantown. But there it is. It's the Gravely Pro Turn 560 model. Look at this bad boy, gas.
Is he going to start up a lawn mowing company, like a landscaping company on the side so he can just be good to go for the winter time?
I'll be his like, foreman or landscaping VP or whatever the title is. Look at this roll up, man. He's got the white shoes and everything.
I actually heard Paris Hilton called. She said, "That's hot."
Wasn't there like a flap, not a displaced flap, but
Stop
like
with
a
your flaps.
Flap about the that? Flaps. Somebody didn't know the Paris Hilton thing. Anyway. I Russ, you criticized my Ego Zero Turn battery powered mower on Twitter.
Yeah.
I take offense to that. My battery
I said that mower, his would eat yours, which is true.
No, my battery powered mower is a fucking beast. Everybody is sleeping on the Ego Zero Turn. It is powerful, man. It is powerful. And the batteries last, and I don't know how they get them. I guess they have to mine the lithium or whatever. I don't know how the electricity goes into the grid, but I think it's clean and I think we're saving the environment at the same time. So I'm not gonna let some Zelensky lookalike here criticize my
hey, his name's Trevor. Be nice. All right, he has a name.
good save, yeah. Welcome to the big boys club.
Good for Landon Dickerson. This is a great move. And what you don't see is, and it is very misleading, is that Landon Dickerson is a very large man. Mm-hmm. And that is a very large mower. And Kinker's is like a compact. His is like the Ford Fiesta. All right.
Kagan calls it the grass Prius. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's pretty fair.
I think if Dickerson sat on my mower, he would break it.
He would break it. Like that, there's no way the electricity would guide him the rest of the way. Like, let's be real. Come on now. Come on.
Chevy says that I'm a secret lefty climate warrior. I actually am not. I just am a very nature attuned person.
I grew up
in the exurbs. We had a hunting camp. Like the white-tailed deer is probably my spiritual animal. So I want to do my part, but I'm not like a granola. I'm not gonna be like an eco-terrorist. Like, who are the people that bomb? Like, I'm not gonna bomb anybody because they're cutting down trees or whatever, you know.
Well, thank goodness they take this video down from YouTube if you said that that you were. So I'm glad that
I'm not show canceled.
How many times has Kincaid tried to get the show canceled in the last 10 minutes? Yeah.
It's my show. I can do what I want. You know, we can't be canceled. There is no cancellation. We established that with the comedian who was on a couple months ago. You don't get canceled. You just get replatformed. Yeah, here's Craig with the Pro Turn 560 Kawasaki. Wow. Manager
five star reviews. Look at that.
$15,249. I'm sure he got a discount. Wow. You think he's walks into the Agway or something and says, "Hey, I'm a Philadelphia Eagle. Can I get a discount on my riding mower?" You know,
nah. You ain't getting this at your Ace Hardware or True Value Hardware store anyways. You probably have to go somewhere more expensive than Home Depot. I'll say that for sure.
I have to say, listen, what other sports program in the Philadelphia region is going to give you this kind of landscaping talk? You know,
we'll get this in Miami.
I'm pretty sure that didn't the Cuz talk about this on his first show today? Did he talk about the
No, don't do that. We're not going to do Italian stereotypes here on the show.
I'm Italian. What the
What? You can do Irish.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you are.
Italians, the Italian stereotype by an Italian is really the worst thing that's come out of the show today. Italian, I can do Irish. The games you played in Boyertown again, Kincaid. Let's go there.
Smear the blank. We can't say it anymore. But I'm Irish. I can do Irish jokes. You're Italian. You can do Italian jokes. Trevor is whatever. So
Trevor is actually Irish. His mom's side's from the Ireland. My mother's from Ireland anyway. So
okay, so you can do Irish jokes. So we have two
Irish jokes.
So two Irishmen and Zelensky walk into a bar. So Anthony Gargano, yes, he debuted his PHLY show today. His 6 month the 6 month enforcement of the non compete based on the lawsuit settlement has come to an end. So he was on from 9 to 11 at PHLY. A lot of people, believe it or not, do not know what PHLY is. I see comments on Facebook saying, what is this? Where do I listen to? It's a website. Mm-hmm. All City Network, their Philadelphia website. Anthony Gargano went over there to build the staff, left 97.5 The Fanatic, big lawsuit and all that. Russ, you can start the discussion. What did you think of the Cuz's first show?
Well, I put out some thoughts on this on Monday's Crossing broadcast, and I said I'd be very interested to see what this show was going to look like, what it was going to sound like, and I was interested in what the audience was going to be, and it was lower than I think a lot of people expected it to be. It is the first episode. I think that you could say that the knife cuts both ways, right? Because he's been off the radio for 6 months, but he's still a given. He's still a known commodity. He still has a presence on social media. They haven't been able to really put out that he's going to be on PHLY, although the parent company had him and Baldy doing an NFL show for a few months when they, I think, kind of panicked, like, we're paying this guy a lot of money and he can't do anything for us. So I think that was a thing. And I was, I expressed concern because that show did not do very good numbers on YouTube. Podcast feed, I have no idea. Like, maybe they have a substantial podcast audience.
They have
for
a hockey show too, also,
for that show.
By the way.
Yeah, which I also don't listen to. But yeah, they have a few national shows. They have their local shows here and in Chicago and in Phoenix and in Denver, and all to varying degrees of success. The thing with Gargano was you only get one chance to make a first impression, and I don't know if they landed it today. And it's weird because if you talk to people who are in the Philly media landscape, they all have very similar takes on what PHLY is, what it's doing well, what it's doing poorly. That's radio people. That's content creators. That's even some TV people. They're all just and it's very rare that you can get so many people on the same page with the same feedback. And I think the thing that a lot of people were looking for today is, how is this going to differentiate itself? Like, how is Gargano's show with this new network, with this YouTube channel, going to be different than what he was doing with The Fanatic? And I said on Monday, I go with the Eric Bischoff methodology. You have to be better than, less than, or different than, right? All right, so what was different then? I don't know. I wouldn't say much of anything. The studio was different from what he was doing with the Fanatic. The backdrop was different. What did they do less than? There were less callers because they don't have that functionality yet. Because for some reason in the months since they launched here, they didn't have that at the ready for his show, which I fundamentally don't understand. And he led off the show saying that, like, we're going to have callers where there might be a video component. Why is that not ready 6 months later or however many months later? That seems weird. Better than? I have no idea. Like, that's the other thing, too. I genuinely don't know. The thing that – here's what I would have liked, okay? I think that if you're going to have Anthony Gargano exclusively streaming and doing a podcast, then you should free the language, right?
Yeah.
He said in a promo, bleeping. No. If we're going to go all in, right? If you're going to go all in on this thing, are we really afraid? Even if you're going to just bleep it, let him F-bomb. If he's afraid to F-bomb on the regular show, let him be a little bit lax. To me, it just felt like a smaller scale version of what he was doing at the Fanatic because the studio feels smaller. It feels cramped. And so, I don't know. The most viewers I saw was just south of 700 concurrent. And it looks like however many hours since it went off, 2.5 hours since it went off, it's at 2,500 total views on YouTube. Is that a success for the amount of money they're paying him? No. Will it be better as the playoffs come around for the NBA? Probably. Will it be better for football season? You would certainly hope so. What I said on Monday is what I'm going to stand with, which is if that YouTube channel doesn't grow to 30, 40,000 at least by the end of the year, then there's a real problem. It should be able to get closer to 70, 80,000 based on what he's being paid and based on what they're paying some of the other people in like premium positions over there and based on some of the people that they've had conversations with about also coming over to do things. You have to at some point make significant revenue and like that channel has to grow. And if it doesn't, to me, that's a big red flag.
So in the statement, Cuz kind of read off like a little bit of – he had like two pieces of paper and he was like kind of reading, kind of talking, alternating between the two of them this morning. And he kind of like did a funeral. He was explaining why he left 97.5 The Fanatic, but he was also kind of like introducing PHLY to people, which made me think that like that would have worked to Russ's point like 6 months ago if the lawsuit hadn't happened and they were all coming together at the same time. And it's like, here's what we're about. Here's what we're going to do. But it was like, they were past that point, right? I mean, like, we know what's going on. So, like, you can start your show. But it just reinforced to me that he was like the centerpiece, the main talent, like the guy who put the rest of the group together, you know? And so it was just a little strange to hear him kind of say, all right, we're getting started at PHLY and this is what we're doing or whatever. You know, they haven't been firing on all cylinders yet because of the lawsuit and, you know, Coach Camille getting fired and some shuffling in the sales department. I'm curious to see. I'm like, Russ talks about YouTube numbers and things like that. I think we should all be curious to see what happens over there because they are, this is an exit from traditional media, terrestrial radio. And like, what is the sustainability of something like this? The people who pay for the Inquirer, who pay for the Athletic, are they going to pay the subscriber tier for PHLY? You know, are there enough incentives to do that? And from a business sense, yeah, I want to see what happens. I want to see if it stays afloat and see if they build a listenership. I'm intrigued by all of it.
Trevor, in a sec, but like their other issue is if you're trying to do this is just the fundamental flaw with the model, right? This is the fundamental flaw that I flagged when they tried to buy Snow the Goalie. It feels like the Athletic with video, and there's nothing that I've seen from the company as a whole in the other markets that makes it feel dynamic. Now, I have ideas, okay? Like, if I were going to fix PHLY or I were going to fix what they're doing, I do have some ideas. And I think a lot of people in the media market, in the media space in the city, have some ideas. There is a way to optimize what they're doing. There's a way to do things better. Here's the concerning thing. If I were Andre Iguodala, who just dropped millions of dollars in VC capital into the company, if 6 months in, or however many months it's been since launch, if I still had employees who were getting paid well to do what they're doing, and they're putting out one piece of content a day, or one piece of written content every other day, and they're effectively watering down in some cases what their coverage is because they have to do it every day, I'd have a problem. I'd also have a problem if some of those people were also vocalizing, well, it's a startup. It's not. It's new to the market. It's not a startup company. It's a company that has existed in other markets for years. So I don't know. The one thing that I've had other media people say in their conversations with some of the folks from over there is there just doesn't seem to be a lot of driving dog in a lot of these people. I wish everybody the best. I hope that it works. I hope it succeeds because I said on Monday, their media jobs are dwindling. The outlets to write at and to produce content at are dwindling. But like to me, from the outside, I look and I see so many red flags and I'm just like, you have an opportunity here with actual money behind you. Like don't fuck it up. And right now, just based on what their growth has been so far and based on his initial number today, I'm like, what are we doing, guys? Like, fix it. Fix it now. Fix it 2 months ago. Trevor, time's yours.
Yeah, time's yours. Yes, definitely. I'm just not impressed. I know it's one show. It's like I'm also not impressed with the whole PHLY brand. It just seems like you got people from, like, other places, like 97.5 Broad Street Hockey. It's like they're not impressing me. It feels like the same content that was on their shows were brought over there. I just think there's nothing new. And like I seen Cuz's show, I was watching a little bit, and I was like, this feels like the same show, but on a new brand, a smaller stage. And how he said, like, there's going to be problems in this. I was like, dude, you had 6 months to perfect this show, and you're supposed to give me an impression. Like, I'm not going to tune back in, honestly. Like, you're supposed to bring in new people besides the old people. And also, charging $100 for a diehard sub is kind of ridiculous, honestly.
Well, I think you just have to have to keep things simple. I mean, like, yeah. I don't have a large staff, but, you know, I've had the privilege of managing different people over the years. And, like, I think the most simple thing you can do as a millennial manager is just to let people do what they're best at, you know? So, Pagan, like, focus on video, do the funny blogs. I'll handle the stupid press comments or something, right? Because I have the writing background. You're a brilliant content creator, you know what I'm saying? And I think, like, you know, that's one of the things that I think that they could benefit from a little bit more is maybe like, who's our best writers? Let's let them write. Who are our best podcasters? They can podcast. You know, I think like it's a hard transition when you take writers and you ask them to become YouTube people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not many people make that transition pretty smoothly. So, you know, I think you just got to kind of like streamline it a little bit and like find out, hey, where are we strong? Let's focus on this and let's, you know, get people in the best roles and, you know, make that work. But I'm with the rest of them, man. I mean, I want to see it succeed because I think it's a precursor for what everybody else is going to have to deal with in digital media, right? It kind of sets the tone to say, okay, you guys go first and we'll see if this is sustainable and see if there's anything that, see what that means for the rest of us. Yeah, if I remember correctly, when I was at Philly Voice for a little bit, they started when they split off from the Philadelphia Inquirer and they had like George Norcross money or whatever, right? A couple of years to sustain yourself and then you have to start building up that revenue on your own where then I can take the training wheels off. That's where I think PHLY is right now. Because I think, Russ, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think those guys have 2-year contracts. And
I think in most cases, I don't know at everybody, but I believe in most cases it was 2-year contracts.
2-year deals. So
I think that when they initial, so I don't think that everybody is on the same structure.
Okay. But the point being,
I think that there might have been a few people brought in on 1 year. And I think that in the initial phase, there was like talk of 3-year deals. 2 was definitely like a standard.
Okay. So for all intents and purposes, we think that there's like maybe 2 years of venture capital here to kind of like, you know, you have to start selling and you got to build these sponsorships or whatever, you know, we'll set you up for this amount of time and then you go from there. So I think that's probably like not the benchmark. What am I trying to say? Like the target date that we're kind of looking at here is like 2 years down the road. We'll probably find out what's real and what's not, but yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm reading the comments here as we're going, and like I see a lot of people saying something to the effect of like podcast market is saturated. A lot of people doing what we're doing right now, doing these YouTube shows, StreamYard shows. Right. So I think Eric Bischoff, whatever the fuck Russ was talking about earlier, that makes a lot of sense. Like, how are you different, you know? So
controversy creates cash.
That's exactly right.
Look at me.
Yeah. No, but that was good. That was
maybe you have to be like us. Maybe you got to like do goofy shit about like or chase like Jamie Apodi stories or talk about lawnmowers on your YouTube show. You know,
there are three things that if they did them right now would make them an exponentially more successful YouTube channel. I'm not going to say what they are, but there are three things.
You have to pay for
that. I'm not. Yeah, fuck that. I'm not giving free.
You can get that on our subscriber tier if you want to hear Russ give out advice on how to be successful. $29.99 for the year.
It's not that complicated. The fact that they haven't done it yet is mind numbing.
Venmo Kinker.
This is the kind of thing that'll piss somebody off though.
Oh, I like that already.
I had somebody say to me yesterday, somebody who has had a lot of success in this market, said, why is it that the company that came in to be the Progressive Media Company, that's a video-focused medium, why does Jacob Media do better social media content than PHLY? And I thought about it for a second, and once I got done thinking of Dan Cilio's face saying dumb shit, I looked at some of the other people that they have and some of the other short-form content, and I said, you know what? That person had a point. I don't know. I will say there is one person over there who I think is incredible, sensational, and I was told going into when we talked to them initially is fantastic. The person who does the graphics over at All City in general, mm-hmm. does their intros, their sizzles, all that, that person, whatever they're getting paid, should probably get paid more. That is where they're like, which is why I don't understand why the social stuff is like as disengaging as it is. Anyway. Wow. I gave a positive there. I said, I hope everybody succeeds, and I gave that person a shout out.
I do want to get to something before Russ has to jump off in a couple of minutes. So real quick, I want to address allegations in the chat that I am high, that I am stoned. I am not stoned right now. I always look like this in March because I have allergies, and my eyes don't open very wide to begin with. So I always look like I'm blitzed out of my mind, but I promise I'm not high. I'm not on the Maui Wowie. I'm not on the Swedish Chiba. You know,
You're not on ayahuasca too either.
I'm not on ayahuasca. Yeah, I'm not doing Aaron Rodgers drugs or anything like that. Russ, Kevin Sullivan, Philadelphia Union. They found a way to keep him in Philadelphia before Manchester City comes in with their oil money and takes him. Win-win situation, I think, because the Union were at a disadvantage here where they could have come in and paid him jack shit for him. They might have got some training compensation, but because he was not under contract, you know, there's no transfer fee or anything like that. You agree with me?
None of it matters. Kevin,
the fuck is that? What is with the Nietzsche, like,
negativity?
Nothing matters.
Because this is – so here's the problem, though. And I'm kind of taking your position in the show today.
Nothing matters. What are you fucking James Hetfield here? Nothing else.
As somebody who was a season ticket holder, as somebody who covered the team for a bit, including the day that they won the supporter shield with like 1,000 people in the stands during COVID, there is a part of me that will always support what the Union is in theory and still be just as pissed off at the Union in practice. Because while they have this owner who is a sugar man, not a sugar daddy, they have no chance of doing anything of value. They will always be within striking distance, but never be able to get over the hump. They continue to be able to maximize whatever they have available at their disposal. And Ernst Tanner is a sensational executive. And Jim Curtin has certainly outcoached and outmanaged what I thought he was capable of. But the fact remains, when you see a team like LAFC that continues to go out and get star player after star player, and then even go out and sign an Olivier Giroud, who is certainly past his prime, but a better option up front than most teams in the league have. When the rich get richer and the Union don't, it's hard for me to get excited. I think it's great that they found like a little stopgap. I think it's great that they continue to cultivate, you know, excellent potential players that are going to go off and play for top clubs in Europe, or at least get picked up by, you know, even if he doesn't play for Manchester City and gets transferred elsewhere on loan. It's still a great thing that you can create this, but they put so much money into that academy and building up those guys, and then they all leave, or many of them leave, and they don't put money in the team that actually takes the field at Subaru Park. And that is a fundamental issue, and it will always be until this league forces a sale or this owner takes on a minority owner to actually fund the thing. None of it matters. Unfortunately, none of it matters. It's really cool. It's a great story, but it doesn't matter because they're not going to get over the hump.
Russ, can I trade you Inter Miami for Philadelphia Union? Because we don't care about soccer down here. give you Inter Miami?
We'll take Messi and Busquets and Jordi Alba. You can have the guy we signed from fourth division Moldova.
You know? Again, it's great. Like, imagine if you gave Ernst Tanner a legitimate budget. Can you imagine, Kevin, what he could get?
Like just
I mean, they'd win the cup. They'd win it all. They'd do the double.
They don't even need a lot. They just need a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they don't
at
get
least
it.
You guys it's, have a stadium. A at least you have an actual stadium, unlike Inter Miami that plays in a temporary stadium still anyways. It's going to take 10 years to get the stadium
back. I mean, NYFCFC, you know, up at Yankee Stadium for quite a long time playing on, you know, an arena football-sized field, you know, so.
Well, the Proud Boys will fill the stadium when it debuts for them up there. This is good. I mean, where else do you get MLS talk, lawnmower talk, Flyers talk? I'll do anything to not talk about the Eagles right now.
What's that team? They're.
I've got to go. I've got to go to another meeting, gents. Lovely chatting with you as always. Yeah, and play the freaking song. Ah!
No, wait.
Play the song.
Oh my God,
Russ. Anyway, yeah.
I love him.
That's Russ, everybody. James Hetfield, Friedrich Nietzsche. Nothing matters at all. It's all meaningless. We're just staring into the void here on Crossing Broadcast. Let me read this real quick. For people who don't know what the fuck I'm talking about here, this is from Tom Bogert at The Athletic. He said the Philadelphia Union reached an agreement on transfer terms with Manchester City to send 14-year-old academy player Kevin Sullivan to Manchester when he turns 18, say sources briefed on the deal, who added that the agreement is heavy on add-ons and includes a sell-on percentage. In the meantime, Sullivan is finalizing an MLS homegrown contract with the Union that will keep him stateside until he moves across the Atlantic. Sources say the homegrown deal is the richest in MLS history. The Union agreed with City that it would send Sullivan to a City football group side elsewhere in Europe if his development surpasses MLS before his 18th birthday, sources say. So all this means in layman's terms is that the best Union prospect of all time will probably play for the Union before he goes to Europe, and the team in Europe will get him, and the Union will make some more money off of it versus having him just stolen from. And that's good because they put a lot of money into the academy and they produce a lot of players to the academy. And if they're never going to play for the Union, or they're only going to play for the Union sparingly before they go to Europe, then you have to make sure you're properly compensated for it because, I will read this, Craig. Give me one sec. You have to make sure you're properly compensated for it because, you know, if not, then what? You're developing other people's players, right? You down with OPP? Yeah, you know me. Anyway, so this is the disclaimer.
That's how I always feel about the MLS. I really do. It's like every top player that goes there, it's like they go get pooched off from like to the league or the Premier League, and anyone who wants to get chase a buck or get a last paycheck, they come here anyways.
Well,
that's how I've always felt about
it. Along those lines, this is the footnote that I put in yesterday's story. By the way, this story is dedicated to the idiot on Facebook who thinks that losing young talent to Europe is a good thing. It's good for the United States national team, yes, but it's not good for the Philadelphia Union. Some people actually care about the local team that plays in the domestic league, and they want to see both improve. I've got zero time for Euro snobs on here. Rah, rah, I'm Chelsea till I die. Fuck out of here with that. You're from South Jersey, and your wife bought you that jersey for Christmas 3 months ago. So.
Finally,
I'm sorry. I don't listen. If people like want to watch Arsenal at 7 a.m, that's great. But if you like pay attention to the Union, or maybe you buy a shirt or you go to a game, that's cool too. That's all I ask, man. I just don't. I don't have any time for people who say I watch the Premier League. It's amazing. Fuck the Union. Fuck MLS. All that. If you don't like MLS, it's fine. Nobody's saying that you have to like MLS and you have to like the Union. But our domestic soccer league doesn't get better if people only shit on it. Right. So that's all I've ever been asked. If you want to pick a team in Europe, if you want to be a Manchester United fan, that's great. All I would ask is that you give like half of a shit about the Union and care about them at least getting better and trying to be better over here, because we'll never get even close to being at the quality of like a Bundesliga or a Premier League or anything like that if all we do is just dump on MLS and say that the Union suck ass. So that's my TED talk on that.
I like that TED talk, by the way. I'll give you my $10 for it.
There you go. Thanks. Maybe we get a super chat in here. Yeah. So I do want to run down something that we never really talk about real quick. Yeah. UFC is returning to Atlantic City.
Let's go.
It was just down
here in Miami anyway. So it did another great gate anyways. So
yeah. And I know Miami has a good combat sports culture. It's a diverse culture.
Did you know they were blacklisted for like 20 years almost?
Why is that?
They had horrible crowds in the early days of the UFC anyways. And they put it at in Sunrise and people got mad about it. Now they just do it in Kaseya Center in downtown Miami and people are like, oh, we're coming. They outdrew like they had over a $1 billion, a crazy gate. Yeah. Trump shows up, Kid Rock shows up, like Portnoy showed up. It's like everyone will come down here if it's a UFC fight down here in Miami anyways, which is crazy. And the tickets are insane anyways.
UFC Atlantic City, March 30th. They haven't been back since 2018, I want to say, where I think Kevin Lee fought Edson Barboza. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good card there with some guys who were like up-and-comers at the time. Like Merab Dvalishvili was on that card, I want to say. So the headliner for... So the headliner was originally supposed to be Vicente Luque and Sean Brady, Philadelphia native Sean Brady. Brady dropped out. So Luque is fighting Joaquin Buckley as the co-main, and Aaron Blanchfield and Manon Fiorot are the headliner. I kind of love it, honestly. Aaron Blanchfield is a fucking killer.
I'll check it out.
And I think she's going to be a title. I think she's going to be the champion at some point. And she's from New Jersey. Like, I think it's exciting. I think that's a perfectly legitimate main event for a fight night in Atlantic City. What do people want? Like, what do people expect? A pay-per-view card? No. But it's not the Apex either. And you've got some local guys fighting. Bill Algio has been on this show before. Senor Perfecto, he's got his gym up in King of Prussia. He's fighting. Chris Weidman, former champ, he's on the card. Andre Petrosky, local guy, is also on the card, as is there's another local guy on here. I can't remember who the hell it is, though. But there's some local flavor, and there's some good fights. And Blanchfield versus Fiorot, I want to say it's like number two versus number three, or number one versus number two, or something like that.
I'll take some entertainment on Easter Saturday anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So there's your UFC minute on here. What else did I put on the rundown that I said that we were going to talk about? I guess I feel like we are obligated. I did tease it, so I feel like we do have to talk about the NFL rule changes, at least for
we might as well talk minutes. Eagles and fucking football. Oh, did you see that Eagles are going to be on Peacock week one?
Well, and everybody flipped out because so it's going to, the game's going to be a Peacock exclusive, but everybody in the local market, everybody in Philadelphia gets it on like NBC 10 or something like that. But you, if you're like,
I will not be able.
Yeah. So Trevor's got to watch it in, on Peacock or whatever, you know? And like, honestly, I'm sick of people complaining about this shit. I know it's annoying and I know that like people don't want to do it, but this is not new. And the world has moved into the world of a la carte streaming services where they're all going to be competing for that. So I can't take these complaints very seriously because it's been this way and it's going to continue to be this way. I'm sorry, you know, but I'm like a dad of two daughters. So we got Disney, we got ESPN, we've got Peacock so they can watch Trolls and all this shit. And I got YouTube TV and I'm still paying all that stuff. I'm still paying less than I was for the cable, you know?
I have DirecTV down here because if you use YouTube, you don't get any of the local sports channels at all. And I have to pay $130 for it. I have YouTube TV so I can watch the Eagles and stuff. It's just like it's an ESPN Plus. It's like people are like, what do you not have? It's like, I just have enough. That's what I need. And it's just a joke. It's
the only
like,
thing I don't have is Paramount Plus.
That's the one I don't have, actually.
Yeah, I don't have Paramount
Plus. People like, you should get that. Like, I'm good, honestly. Like,
so I watch the U.S. soccer games in Spanish. I watch them all, like, Univision, you know?
Yes, Univision, yes. Also, like, the Liga Cup was on there, too, anyways, for the MLS and La Liga, too, which was crazy, so.
Yeah, and I have Apple TV for, you know, for the MLS season pass and all that stuff. But I mean, it's like, that's the, like, a la carte streaming is just the nature. And until we go through the whole cycle and come back to cable or whatever, or one streaming service that has everything, then this is where we're currently at with the scene. Okay. So real quick, I hate the change to the hip drop tackle. I think it's terrible.
I think it's brutal.
I hate the change to the kickoff rule. Why not just, they're going to kick the ball out of the end zone, no matter what, they're already doing that. And the now you have to announce an onside kick rule. I think it's terrible. I'm Rush Joy with these takes. Nothing matters. I hate everything that the NFL changed. That's my take on football today.
I looked at it all. I'm like, I'm good. I hate it all. Like, wake me up until I get – I'll do week one if it was a bad call anyway. That's how I'm going to view it, by the way.
It's just more – the hip drop tackle, I think, is the thing that bothers me the most because again, it's just another thing that makes playing defense harder. And everything that they change, like – everything, it seems like everything is a blunting of the effectiveness of defensive players. And they're the ones who always have to change. Even when they did the lowering of the helmet thing a couple of years ago, that was supposed to be enforceable going two ways. You know, if a running back put his head down, he was supposed to get flagged for for spearing and same way that like Levante David would have, right? But they always called it on the defensive guys and they never called it on the offensive players, you know. So there's some times where like you're chasing a guy from behind, and all you can do is get around his hips and like you can't plant your feet, you're chasing, you know. So hip drop and swivel tackles, I mean, sometimes they're unavoidable. And I just, you know,
it's literally going to be flag football now. I'm not looking forward to it now. Like, I think the only sport that hits now is hockey anyway. So that's why.
No, I know. They just keep taking things away. You know, they keep taking things away without adding them. And it's not going to change. NFL's still going to do 40 bazillion viewers every single time, and people will continue to watch and will continue to complain. And maybe that's the theme of the show. Maybe we just embrace the, you know, nihilistic Rush Joy and say that nothing matters, you know?
Yeah. I like Rush Joy put me on the thing, like, I can't trust Torts after another year. And like Russ literally convinced me, like, I can't trust him. I'm like, yep, I'm right with him anyways. Like, yeah. Russ is like Notre Dame over here. So I can't blame him. Like, I'm not even looking forward to football season this year. It's like, I don't even want to see it, honestly.
Rush Stradamus, yeah. Just come on and do your long monologues and then explain why nothing matters. You know, he's a mix between James Hetfield and Frederick Wilhelm Nietzsche. But anyway, that was a good show. Good stuff, good topics. Trevor, thanks for coming on.
Excited,
man.
For opening day. It's tomorrow for you guys.
Tomorrow's opening day. Yeah, we didn't do any Phillies because I just don't like, let's just play baseball, man. I got nothing else to say about them until we get going. I'm excited for the Phillies. They're a World Series contender. I hope that I don't give a shit if they win the division or not. I think that is a nothing topic. They didn't win the division the last 2 years, and it didn't matter. They got to the World Series and they were on the cusp of the World Series. Would it be nice to rub it in the Braves' faces a little bit? Sure. But that doesn't matter. They just have to get off to a better start this year. You know, they can't be slogging through this bullshit. I think having Bryce Harper healthy is going to do that.
We,
you know,
did we talk Ohtani at all? Because I always feel like that statement.
I think that's a larger conversation for another time. Like maybe when we do Phillies next week, because there's too much to get into there. That's like, you know, for a quick sign off kind of thing.
Yeah. I talked about it on the Upper Bowl pod with Sam Lubin from 95.7 The Game, one of my buddies who works for that station. We talked about like something's not adding up. And I feel that too, honestly. Like something's totally missing. There's definitely a chunk of a story that they like MLB is just like, erased and stuff. So that's
how there's definitely it's curious. There's something more to it for sure. And speaking of something more to it, we have a argument about politics taking place in the chat right now. So
I'm not on Team Ford for this because he's ripping me no longer how much. Anyways, he hates how I look,
Ford what rips
clothes I wear, how he thinks I have nervous tics and everything. Yeah. So Ford, I hope you lose this argument, honestly, for my entertainment.
Ford can be antagonistic in the chat, but he did a good job when we had him on the show.
Did he steal Pat Hughes's grandfather sweater? I got to ask that. That's what it looked like. He was wearing a Pat Hughes-type sweater you wear to the ballpark to call a Cubs game.
They're arguing about Disney Plus and Trump and Biden, Trump and Biden right now. So I think it's an appropriate time to call.
I think it's the perfect sign-off.
Yeah. Thank you to everybody in the chat. Thank you to Kevin Kurz from The Athletic. Thank you to Rush Joy, a.k.a. Zelensky. Thank you to Trevor for coming on. Thank you to Craig for producing. And thank you for listening, as always. We will see you next time.